Skyrocketing insulin prices are a national problem, and people with diabetes are doing what they can to cope with high prices while asking state and federal governments for more accountability and more options on how to get access to life-saving insulin. People who can't afford their medication may resort to taking smaller doses or skipping it altogether, which could be deadly. The American Diabetes Association calls diabetes a national epidemic, and it's expensive. We're looking at the insulin marketplace, the politics, the pharmaceuticals who make it, and the patients who need it to live. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Tiffany Stanley is a writer and editor based in Washington, D.C. Her recent piece for the Washington Post magazine is called Life, Death, and Insulin. Tiffany, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So this is a life-saving drug for millions of Americans, yet you write in your piece, it seems we're getting further and further out of reach for people who need it the most. How much has the price of this drug gone up?
Yeah, in the last decade, the price of insulin has tripled. So a 10 milliliter vial that, you know, in 1996 when it came out cost $21 is now $275. And that's true across the board for a lot of insulin products.
Even with insurance, is insulin still setting people back a lot?
It is. It's not that much. People that are underinsured or don't have insurance are the ones that are paying the list price. But a recent small study found that even among insured patients, one in four report rationing their insulin because of the cost. Because of co-pays and because of paying a percentage of that list price, it's still creating a financial burden.
So who are these companies making insulin? Introduce us to the marketplace.
So part of the reason that a lot of activists talk about this is because the market is dominated by three main companies, the American company Eli Lilly, the French company Sanofi, and the Danish firm Novo Nordisk. And they control, I think, like 90% of the American insulin market.
So in terms of controlling the insulin market, these are name brand products. Are there generics out there, or how does that work?
It's a confusing system when it comes to insulin because of the way the FDA registers insulin. And it's actually called something called a biologic, and it's much more complicated to make in some ways. So unfortunately, because of the way things have been regulated, we don't have any true kind of generic interchangeable insulins. We have two new what are called follow-on insulins, but they're only marginally cheaper than the name brands. So that's one of the things that policymakers are looking at, it are ways to kind of get more competition so we can drive those prices down.
So what have the Eli Lillys out there said about these rising prices of this drug? What is accounting for this?
Well, it's another part of our drug pricing system that's very confusing because there's a lot of secrecy about how these drugs are priced, how the prices are raised. These companies don't talk about their pricing strategies. They tend to say, you know, there's a lot of factors involved, including how insurance companies price things, about how pharmacy benefit managers who help us get our drug coverage, how they price things. And it's this system, but as one expert told me, it's a bit of a black box. We actually don't know what's going on behind the scenes.
In this black box, there's been talk about price fixing. Is there any sense that these companies are perhaps in cahoots with each other?
Those are the allegations. I mean, we don't have evidence of that, but there are a lot of investigations that have popped up in the last couple years. Attorneys general are doing investigations. There's a civil lawsuit that's making its way through the courts. And all of these folks are looking at, are they price fixing? Are they raising prices in lockstep? Because right now it looks like they are, but we don't currently have evidence that that's the case. But as some of these court cases and investigations in Congress and otherwise get underway, we might be able to find out more evidence about that.
talking with Tiffany Stanley. She's a writer and editor based in Washington. Her recent piece for the Washington Post magazine is called Life, Death, and Insulin. Are you a diabetic? If so, are you feeling the pain of rising insulin prices? Call in at 800-642-1234. Have you been forced to ration insulin? If so, tell us about it and how has it affected your life? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Tiffany, in the way that you write about insulin, in some ways you say it serves as a proxy for the rising prices across the U.S. prescription drug market. How do you see it that way?
I think that drug pricing has become a huge issue. There were polls that came out in the past year or two just showing how many Americans think this is a really important issue and really want Congress and the Trump administration to do something about it. It was a big campaign trail promise of President Trump. And so we're seeing that we just have this pricing system, as we talked about, that's a black box, that we don't always know what's going on behind the scenes. And there's been a lot of sort of movement, at least in activist circles and in policy circles, to start to figure out what's going on and how can we lower those prices.
A lot of your piece revolves around a family and Alec Rishon Smith. Can you introduce us to his story and what happened there?
Yes. Yeah, so Alec was a young type 1 diabetic. He was diagnosed in his early 20s, and he was turning 26, and like a lot of 26-year-olds, was about to be sort of age out of his mother, Nicole Smith Holt's, insurance policy. And what they found was just that his options on the marketplace were just very expensive. So he made the decision to go without insurance, perhaps not realizing just how much his insulin would cost. But it ended up being his supplies and his insulin were more than $1,300 a month. He made $35,000 a year. So it was something that he could ill afford. He ended up dying from something called diabetic ketoacidosis, which tends to happen when you don't have enough insulin in your system. And his family pieced together after he died that he was struggling within that month of not having insurance. And they came to the conclusion that he had been rationing. And that is what led to his death.
Mm. Let's bring in McKinsey now, joining us from Baraboo. McKinsey, what are your thoughts here?
Well, it's just really, really upsetting and discouraging. My husband is type 1 diabetic. He's been like that since he was a child. And so it's not something that, you know, his lifestyle brought upon him. And the fact that now that he's well into his 30s, he's an extremely healthy diabetic, actually. And there are times, and he makes good money, we do okay, but there are times where he panics. We all panic. Because we cannot get, like, if he runs out of insulin early, which happens from time to time, and you have to pay full price, and that's very expensive. There have also been instances where we've almost resorted to going, you know, becoming a part of, like, the diabetic groups that they have. They have them on Facebook. They have other support groups and blogs. And they exchange diabetic supplies, which is very dangerous. You shouldn't do that, but people are resorting to these things because they want to survive. And the American, like, our system in this country is failing these people, especially the ones who, you were just born with it. And they're contributors to society, they work hard every single day, and all they want to do is live and go home to their families.
McKinsey, I'm going to pause right there with your stories because we're getting closer to the break here. And Tiffany, we'll get back to you on that and this idea of diabetics exchanging supplies to get by. Your thoughts on insulin, 800-642-1234. Are you a diabetic? And if so, are you feeling the pain of rising insulin prices? What do you do about it? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Insulin is a naturally occurring hormone secreted by the pancreas. Many people with diabetes are prescribed insulin either because their bodies do not produce insulin, that would be type 1, or the body does not use insulin properly, type 2. We're talking about the soaring cost of insulin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and Tiffany Stanley stays with us. She's a writer and editor based in Washington. Her recent piece for the Washington Post magazine is called Life, Death, and Insulin, and we're gathering your thoughts at 800-642-1234. What challenges have you faced in trying to get affordable access to this drug? Have you stretched your insulin doses to get by in a month? And what do you think could be done to bring down the cost of insulin? Call in, tweet us at WPR Mornings. Tiffany, before we went to the break, McKinsey was making two points. First point is that when her spouse starts running low or runs out in a month, then you have to pay full price and to get by for the rest of the month. And then what about exchanging insulin supplies and support groups?
That was something I heard from a lot of diabetics who talked about, maybe their prescription wasn't quite right and they needed more insulin in a month, or they ran into insurance coverage issues. I talked to a young woman, Hattie Saltzman, who went nearly a year without buying insulin. She's a college student and her bill per month was $550. So she shared some with her dad, she got samples from her doctor, and eventually some family friends donated leftover insulin to her. And that was something I heard repeated by a lot of diabetics, this kind of black market, these Facebook groups, GoFundMe accounts, people just trying anything they can to get by.
Let's go to Michael now, joining us from Oconomowoc. Michael, hi.
Hey, how are you doing? I'm a physician. I just thought I'd give some perspective. I'm describing, not prescribing, this practice, but I think part of the issue with the pricing is insurance companies will pay, if you have insurance, for higher priced insulin. So they get paid more if the drug companies will get paid more if they price it higher. So unfortunately, if you don't have insurance, you're stuck with that high price. They can't give two different prices or bigger prices. So that's probably one thing that happens. I do have a number of patients who unfortunately are stuck, and one of the options that they do is using NPH or regular that they can get through Walmart for a lot cheaper cost. It's not the preferred insulin because of the pharmacodynamics of the levels of insulin in the blood, but it is a backup, and it's what I used when I was in med school in the 90s. We have much better insulins that we can use now, but if that's all our choice, that is much more affordable, a fraction of what.
Michael, do you see patients having difficulty affording their insulin?
And that's what I'm saying. I do have some, and that's the option that we have to go to. That's, unfortunately, even with insurance, sometimes there's a high deductible, so you're having to pay hundreds of dollars. There's non-insulin for type 2 diabetics. There's things like Victoza and Byetta, Bydureon, that are $600-$700 a month. I advocate, especially with type 2 diabetes, which is different than type 1, lifestyle as best you can, because it's so expensive to treat diabetes. When you get into anything above simple generic metformin, you're getting into these, you're talking, $1,000 potentially a month.
And Michael, very quickly, I know you probably have to get going here, but how expensive are insulin pumps? And when you start looking at delivery systems of insulin?
As far as pricing, that's going to be a higher price. I mean, that's sometimes a barrier as well for many people. I mean, so that's going to be, often using the same insulins, but now you have that pump mechanism in there, and so that's going to be more expensive.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for calling in. Tiffany, you write in your piece about the Walmart grade of insulin. What are your thoughts there?
Yes, it was something that a number of physicians and a and my pharmacist told me about these so-called Walmart insulin. It's available for $25 a vial, so clearly much cheaper than the newer ones. It's something that, you know, doctors said, you know, it's good insulin. It's obviously better than nothing. But it was something that especially type 1 diabetics are very opposed to that being a solution. They find that they give them dangerously low blood sugars, and it's much harder to control their blood sugar levels. Some research bears that out. I think some researchers find that for type 2 diabetics who don't need insulin in quite the same way, that those insulins can be fine. But it's something that I think a number of type 1 diabetics sort of don't want that to be the solution. They want to be able to use the state-of-the-art insulins.
Tiffany, let's turn to politics for a moment here. President Trump has talked about the need to bring down the cost of prescription drugs and unveiled his American Patients First plan earlier this year. What does this plan look like, and what could it mean for the price of drugs like insulin?
So it's a blueprint, and it includes, you know, more than 50 proposals. It has a lot of different ideas, but it's really just a framework at this point. The administration has started at the policy level, looking at different options and putting some initial things into place. But it's really too soon to kind of know exactly what the government is really going to do. But there has been moves at the FDA to get more generics on the market, to, you know, try to figure out, you know, how we can lower these prices specifically for insulin too.
How have you seen lawmakers responding to this rising cost of insulin?
There has been a lot of activity on Capitol Hill on both sides of the aisle. I think they're in the Senate and in the House, there are a lot of lawmakers who are hearing from their constituents, some that are parents of type 1 diabetic children who have been active on this issue. A report just came out in November from a House committee that, you know, is kind of calling on Congress to legislate and start to kind of put some market controls on insulin prices.
So while politicians are trying to hammer things out here, diabetics are still stuck with these prices. Where else might they be turning to in order to try to get cheaper insulin?
Well, there have been some reports of folks trying to get supplies from Canada or Mexico. It's technically illegal to import medication from other countries, but the FDA doesn't generally prosecute individuals if it's a short-term supply for their personal use. So I know one father testified in front of I think the Senate that a 90-day supply of his son's insulin was, you know, almost $1,500. So he started getting it from a Canadian pharmacy for about $300. So that you sort of see that other countries regulate their drugs and cap the price. And because the U.S. does not, we kind of have this imbalance.
And what about the activist movement? Have we seen people organizing around this issue?
Yes, one of the most active social media campaigns that I saw was hashtag insulin for all. And it was started by a group called T1 International. They're based in the UK. And it was originally started as a way to raise awareness about developing countries having problems accessing insulin. And it caught on in the US, a little bit of a surprise in that way that, you know, and as the founder said, you know, it's a shame that a rich country like the US also needs a campaign like this.
Mm. Take us back to the family of Alec Rayshon Smith. How are they moving on in their lives, and how are they advocating in the wake of their son's death?
I mean, Nicole and her family have just become, you know, relentless activists on this issue. She's visited the campus of Eli Lilly. She just went to Sanofi. She has become, you know, she gives speeches. She's talked in front of the Senate Committee of Democrats. I mean, she's just doing everything she can because to her, she's leaving a legacy for Alec, and she wants to make sure that other people don't die the way that he did.
Are there plans to follow up on this reporting? Like, where does this go from here?
I mean, I think we're at the beginning of seeing some real movement and change happening, especially given it just seems like we're reaching a tipping point, that there's a lot of people at high levels of government that feel very strongly about this issue, and there's a lot of activists. So I think in the next couple of years, we may see some changes or some policies that come down that maybe do some good.
Are there any practical pieces of advice you could give diabetics about how to manage their costs for insulin and the challenges that they encounter each month?
I mean, I think that one of the biggest challenges is that if you do not have good insurance, it's a very expensive disease. And so that's something that a lot of people are running into, especially people that are self-insured, where they have those high deductible policies. And I think someone like Alec maybe thought, oh, I can't afford to have this really expensive insurance. I'll just pay for my medications out of pocket. And unfortunately, with being a diabetic, that becomes insurmountable cost. So I think, unfortunately, it's not something that patients, it should be on them to, you know, do it better. I think it's that our system has not supported them in the way that they need to.
Well, Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you so much.
Tiffany Stanley is a writer and editor based in Washington, and her piece for The Washington Post magazine is called Life, Death, and Insulin. Up next, it's news, and we have you always wanted to join the Peace Corps, but you feel you might have missed your chance. Our next guest makes the case that it's not too late. We'll learn the ins and outs of being a Peace Corps volunteer. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.